This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Time was when the nation's news arrived on the doorstep each morning and on the television set every night at 6:30. We have a lot more choices and a lot less time these days, and the audience for news is fragmenting. Fewer of us read the paper or watch network TV news. We rely more on local TV news, cable outlets, talk radio, and the internet, and more of us get our news from comedy and entertainment programs. When asked, younger people mention Jon Stewart's mock newscast The Daily Show more often than Tom Brokaw's real one. This hour, we'll talk with a correspondent from Stewart's The Daily Show. We'll look at the role of comedy shows and how we look at the world, and talk about how politicians use humor to sell themselves and try to win voters. Later in the program, Dean supporters could be a major factor in tomorrow's Democratic presidential primaries, but first, comedy and news. So, NPR aside, where do you get your news? Do you watch The Daily Show or Bill Maher or Conan O'Brien for the laughs or to get caught up on world events? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Stephen Colbert is a correspondent on Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Here's a clip from that program. Stephen Colbert interviews a campaign worker for a presidential candidate, Senator John Edwards, just before the South Carolina primary.
Senator Edwards has said he lives or dies by the results in South Carolina. Are you afraid of dying?
No, we're not going to die.
No one thinks they'll die. Are people dying?
No, nobody's dying.
No one in South Carolina is dying.
Not because of this campaign.
But people are dying.
Certainly people are dying in the natural course of events.
So you admit that people are dying while the campaign is going on.
And maybe while that interview is going on, Stephen Colbert joins us now from New York City, and it's great to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
In addition to the death of several South Carolinians, what other stories have you managed to break this campaign season?
Well, I'm doing a series now called Interviews I Can Get. the first one was Al Sharpton, and it turns out I can get an interview with Al Sharpton, which coined the entire series. After that, I got presidential candidate Senator Bob Graham. The week after he dropped out of the campaign, again, there's an interview I could get. Mm-hmm. And they're very hard-hitting, but with absolutely no effect on the campaign.
Do you get to actually travel on like the rest of the press corps on the campaign trail? That sounded like it was from South Carolina.
Oh yes. We can afford a plane ticket or two. Coach, admittedly. We go out, but we don't go out the way they do. We actually were supposed to interview in a 2-day period both Howard Dean and John Kerry right before the Iowa caucus. And at the time, Dean was leading Kerry, and both Dean and Kerry called the show and said, "Would you send somebody out there? We'd love to do sit downs for the Daily Show." And we said, "Oh, that'd be great. We'll mm-hmm. we'll do it like Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie. You know, the Simple Life." And these are the two, you know, rich East Coast, Ivy League men who try to slum on the farm to, connect with the farmers. Well, we get there, and Kerry takes an 8-point jump in the polls and suddenly isn't on his bus anymore. He's now on a helicopter, to which I am not invited. And the Dean people are in full panic mode, and they don't want to talk to anybody. So the Dean people come up to us, and they say, we're going to try to fit you in this weekend. And we said, "No, you forget. We're fake press. We're here for 2 days in order to create the illusion that we're going to be here for the entire campaign. If you don't give us an interview today, there's absolutely nothing for us to put on the air. I mean, we'll shoot lock-offs of locations and do it in front of a green screen, but no interview, we're leaving at 3 o'clock. So, yes, we travel with the press, but only to the point where we can create the illusion that we're press. We never forget that we're not.
The rest of the time, many of your far-flung reports you're standing in front of pictures.
Yes, moving pictures. We shoot video lock-offs of locations wherever we go, in the United States or sometimes in Europe, and we just roll those behind the reporters later to create the illusion. I don't know why all the news doesn't do it, because we fool people all the time. I went to London to do some reports, and I did these lock-offs in front of Buckingham Palace. I did stand-ups, like reports. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, no one believed that I was there, because our green screen technology is so good that it's a complete waste of a British Airways ticket for us to go.
We actually broadcast with pictures behind me all the time, and they're very convincing.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think of yourself as the program is a mock newscast. Jon Stewart doesn't try to fool anybody that this is real news. And yet...
No, we constantly try to remind people that we're fake.
And yet, people think you'd provide, in some respects, a better take on the news than what they might get on the regular networks.
A take on the news. That's interesting. They get a different take on the news that they're getting on the broadcast, the network broadcast, that's for sure. I don't know if they're getting a better source of information. And I think that's an important difference between the two. Mm-hmm. Like, I hear the statistic thrown around a lot that more people between the age of 18 and 34 get their news from The Daily Show than any other single source. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily believe that, because if they didn't know what the story was on some level, they wouldn't laugh at our jokes. We're not educating them that much.
We're going to be hearing more of those statistics later in the program, but...
I can't wait.
It's going to be really exciting. We're going to have a drum roll and everything. But
timpani!
As you talk about that, I mean, do you accept that you have some degree of responsibility? I know Jon Stewart, for example, goes out of his way to interview people. John Podhoretz was on last week, people who the audience may not necessarily agree with.
No, we accept absolutely no responsibility journalistically, but we do accept responsibility not to be complete jerks to our guests, which is a difference. John is very nice to his guests, but I don't think he feels he has a responsibility to necessarily educate the audience. We're entertainers. We're comedians, and the genre we've chosen is this light news parody.
Hmm. Do you think that the politicians are easier to poke fun at, or the media?
Anybody who is high status is easy to poke fun at. Anybody who's puffed up in some way. And politicians have to be high status on a certain level, because they are. They're the rulers of a country. And so it's great to burst their balloon. And the press has sometimes, not NPR, obviously.
Of course not.
A hyperbolic self-important quality about the way they talk. Just the sort of... the grave way the story is told. You raise yourself up and somebody's going to want to, shoot an arrow at you.
Yeah, I'm sure you were listening, though, when we had the Hinge of Fate radio debate amongst the candidates there in Iowa. The turning point probably of the 21st century. Anyway, let's get some callers on the line. Brett is with us from Oxford, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Brett.
How you doing? I was just like, I'd like to thank you, actually, Stephen. What you do is provide an outlet for, transparent news, if you will. There comes a point when the public becomes distrustful in the other news sources. Nothing's really fair and balanced. And when you're able to look through the sarcasm of what you're saying and find another layer of that, there's a psychological element that you're able to agree with or not agree with what you're saying at the same time, but find your own element in what's going on. And the news you're bringing to them.
Well, I think you make a good point about trustworthiness. We make a concerted effort at all times to say that there's no reason you should trust us.
Right.
We flagrantly manipulate footage.
Right.
We manipulate message for comedic purposes. And I think sometimes that the news manipulates, maybe not in a nefarious way, but for dramatic purposes or to find closure on a story. It's very easy, from what I see watching a lot of the news, to emotionally contort footage. Fox will add music underneath war footage. All that distorts in a way that doesn't add to information, just adds to the dramatic or entertainment quality. And we come out and say that we're doing that. So I think maybe that's one way in which we don't.
But when we don't try to ask
for trustworthiness.
When someone has to find the humor in what's being presented towards them, when they have to look on at another level of as to why they're laughing at this, there's a psychological element into it where you involve yourself more in what's going on and look at it in a completely different way, and that's how you shift paradigms. That's the way that entire society can change that kind of stuff. This wasn't going on, and 20 years ago we had not necessarily the news stuff like that, maybe, but on a wide scale like we have today, you really can't do this.
If you have to find the news, the humor, Brett, I think that's NPR. If you're laughing, that's probably Comedy Central.
Right.
Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
You talk about manipulation, Stephen Colbert, and a lot of it, the pieces that you guys go out and do when you interview people, clearly that clip where you're playing interviewing the Edwards campaign worker, he knew who you were and what you were up to, more or less. Sometimes it seems like people are oblivious to what you're doing and don't get it.
No, I mean, these days, in the old days, meaning before the 2000 campaign, people rarely knew what the show was, even if they had heard of the show, because we had a much smaller audience, and didn't really have much press attention, which was great for us, because you go do interviews, you don't necessarily want somebody to try to be funny for you. We really need information from people. We really need the opinions of people who are making the decisions about our country or people who are advocates for a particular issue. It doesn't help us at all if they start yucking it up and wearing, you know, funny hats. These days, people know what the show is, but still, we just try to get the straightest answers from them as possible. And we don't really know what's necessarily going to be funny about it until the moment it happens. Like that interview with the man about, you know, is anybody dead? Mm-hmm. Well, that came out of a real interview we started. We were talking about something the governor had said about do or die, and it just occurred to me to follow the metaphor to a completely illogical end. And so in the moment, the person who I'm talking to doesn't really know where we're going, really any more than I do. And sometimes it's far more manufactured than that. But most of the time, we're having a conversation and discovering what might be funny on the fly, and then we put it together back in New York.
Let's get another caller in. This is Scott, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi there, Neil. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Scott.
I've been using The Daily Show for my news for about a year and a half, 2 years, about the time I got TiVo, local news and network news just became too depressing. I just don't watch it anymore. It's nice to have things like Mesopotamia come up, you know, and put a little levity in some serious situations.
So you don't read the newspaper, Scott, or news magazines?
Well, I do get real news from NPR, and by reading the content that I get from reading is typically off the internet.
Do you find that a lot, Stephen? That's your audience?
I hear that sometimes from people. They say, "Oh, I get all my news from you," and we're so glad that people like the show, but. There is a they're missing some of the joke if they don't actually watch the mass media, because, you know, half of our joke is what the news is, and a lot of times our joke is the way the news is reported elsewhere. You know, the style is also something that we're parroting, not just what's being reported in that style. And so,
gotcha.
You know,
a la Fox News and, yeah.
I won't name any networks. I'll just say certain fair and balanced organizations. But, you know, with the 24-hour news cycle, I really can't blame any of the 24-hour networks from doing anything they can to keep viewers, because while the world is a big, wonderful place, 24 hours is a lot of time to fill. And so you end up filling in times between updates in stories with analysis on what you've already said about the story. And analysis is just conjecture, and for that conjecture to have any importance, you have to seem like an important person. And that artificial puffing up of yourself in order to get people to listen to your opinion is what makes 24-hour news so laughable to me, is that someone's opinion, someone they literally grab out of, sometimes it feels like off the street, to talk about what's happening in the Scott Peterson trial, is the most mockable thing about the 24-hour cycle.
Scott, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more of your questions for Stephen Colbert as we talk about comedy and news. We're going to take a short break. If you'd like to join us, it's 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later this hour, we'll talk about the race for the Democratic presidential nomination and where the DENIACs will find themselves, in which camp tomorrow on Super Tuesday, when that happens in 10 states across the country. Right now, we're going to continue our conversation about comedy shows as an alternative source of news and information. Of course, you're invited to join us. Do you rely on Leno or Koppel for the straight dope on today's breaking stories? Do you read the New York Times or The Onion? Give us a call at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, TOTN at NPR.org. For the next few minutes still, we have Stephen Colbert, a correspondent for Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. You've got to leave, I know, but I wanted to read this email. We got this from Barbara in Waco, Texas. Surely The Daily Show will acknowledge they do have some sort of editorial position. It's not just comedy. Now it's not news. It's more op-ed, but there is an editorial stance. Could Stephen comment?
Absolutely. 100% I have an editorial stance. I desperately want our president to lose the next election, but it doesn't keep me from attacking the Democrats on the show, too. Listen, you're going to attack or mock or make fun of anybody who is in power right now. And the Republicans control the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branch, so there's hardly another target. And during the entire primary season, we're just throwing the biggest haymakers we can find at all the Democratic candidates. We haven't been kind to them on any level. But, most of the time, there's really only one game in town, and that's the Republicans.
Let's get one more caller in with Stephen Colbert. This is Laura, who's with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I am one of these supposed young people that gets their news from The Daily Show. And in sort of trying to get more news from other sources, I also obviously listen to NPR. I started tuning into CNN and headline news in the morning when I was getting ready, and I found it nearly impossible to find any news. I found people oohing and aahing over Golden Globes fashion, and every time I'd flip around, these sort of light news topics were what was being discussed, and actually, on the campaign trail, I think in Iowa, I saw Steve Colbert gone to as a source of information on CNN.
Were you actually found yourself on CNN recently, Stephen Colbert?
Yes, I was on Howard Kurtz's Reliable Sources out in CNN, in Iowa for CNN. And as I said to him, I don't think you could have a less reliable source on your show. You may want to think about changing the name. I think the press gets the joke of the show better than even the general public does. And so I think they like us and they invite us on their shows.
Laura, thanks very much.
Thanks.
And Stephen Colbert, we know you've got to run. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Stephen Colbert is a correspondent for Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He joined us from New York City. Last week, The Daily Show ran an investigative piece on the correlation between Rock the Vote and voter turnout. And here's how the story was reported by Samantha Bee.
In 1990, Rock the Vote was founded as a way to use famous musicians to make voting seem cool to young people. And ever since, youth voter turnout has plunged. We sat down with Rock the Vote president Jamu Green, known to her friends as Red.
Why are you trying to drive down youth voter turnout?
We're trying to increase youth voter turnout.
Well, then how do you explain this list of performers who support Rock the Vote? Hootie and the Blowfish, Elton John, Reba McEntire?
To help us sort out how close the comedy is to reality, we're joined here in Studio 3A by Carol Daugherty of the Pew Research Center. Good to have you with us.
Good afternoon.
So who gets their news from The Daily Show and its ilk?
Young people, overwhelmingly. It's for young people, those under 30. It's as important as network news and maybe even be about to surpass network news for political news. And it's as important as newspapers as well.
And that's a huge change over the past 30 years. I mean, obviously, this particular program is relatively new. But
well, it's part of a broader change that's occurred over the last 30 years as each succeeding generation of young people tunes in less and less to those traditional sources.
And give us some numbers. I mean, we threatened Stephen Colbert with them, but we'll ask one.
Our basic question was, do you regularly learn something from the following source? And 21% said comedy shows like The Daily Show or Saturday Night Live, and 23% said network news. So it's right on par with network news at this point. These are under 30s.
And only get their news from this
source? No, these are a variety of sources, but these are the leading sources. Cable's the only head and shoulders above the comedy shows and the newspapers and the network news. So it's right on par with most of the sources for young people.
Our last caller was interesting. I mean, she's obviously a CNN watcher, among other things. But doesn't comedy news, and this goes back to what Stephen Colbert, it is more meaningful if you knew what the straight report was, if you then watched the joke on Jon Stewart's show.
Anyone who's watched the Jon Stewart show knows you need to know who Dennis Kucinich is to get a joke about Dennis Kucinich. On the other hand, we find that people who do rely on these programs aren't terribly well informed, but they're entertainment programs, as Stephen Colbert said. They're not in the business of informing people. They don't want that responsibility, and they don't seem to be succeeding particularly well at it.
How do you judge how informed somebody is?
Well, we did it early in the campaign, so it may not have been an absolutely fair test. We asked people if they knew the Democratic candidate who was a former Army general, which to political insiders is pretty basic knowledge, but to a lot of young people, and especially those who rely on comedy shows, was pretty elusive fact.
Now, obviously, comedy and entertainment is not the only new factor in the media. Mm-hmm. The internet is another huge factor.
The internet, 20% of young people say that they regularly learn something about the political campaign from the internet, which is up again. And that's actually a somewhat encouraging news, simply because people who do rely on the internet tend to be better informed than other people. I mean, that seems to be...
They knew who the Army general was.
Yeah, absolutely, in many cases. And they even knew who the... We asked the second question about who was the former majority leader who was in the race, Dick Gephardt, and very few people knew that generally.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Dan, who's with us from San Mateo, California.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
It seems to me that these statistics that we all keep talking about these past few minutes seem kind of empty in that maybe people are turning to Comedy Channel and other shows like this because they're sick of mainstream media, not because they think they're going to get more truth from comedy shows.
I think that's absolutely correct, and I think another factor is lifestyle. I think increasingly, it's very difficult for many people to tune into a 6:30 news broadcast, especially young people. So if young people are on the go and the only news they see is at 11 o'clock every night when The Daily Show comes on, it's somewhat understandable that they would tune in then.
Dan? Okay, thanks very much. We've been talking about consumers and how we use media. Obviously, there's another side, as sellers, politicians, and newsmakers. How do these changes reflect, how are they reflecting these changes in how we use media?
Well, as you noted at the outset, fragmented media universe means that it's harder to reach people, especially young people, so you have to work harder to get to them. That means go on Leno, that means go on Letterman, that means go on the Internet, do it all, essentially.
And so you saw that reflected in not only Howard Dean's fundraising, but on Arnold Schwarzenegger's decision
Absolutely.
To announce his plans to run for governor on the Leno show.
Schwarzenegger's appearance on Leno was a very big splash. In fact, we found that those kinds of appearances connect more than campaign debates do.
And you're also seeing a phenomenon of, on The Daily Show, a lot of commercials by Halliburton.
Well, people need to connect, and they need to connect in whatever venue they can. And so even if the show may be knocking you on the one hand, you may put an advertisement on the other.
Do you watch these shows?
Yes, I do.
For a living, or just to have a good time?
I just watch it for entertainment, not to get information.
Carol Daugherty, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Carol Daugherty is an editor with the Pew Research Center, and he was with us here in Studio 3A. TV and late-night gab shows have been a home for politicians since John Kennedy and Richard Nixon each appeared on the Jack Parr program while campaigning for the presidency in 1960. Bill Clinton defined his 1992 candidacy with his saxophone solo on the Arsenio Hall show. Remember that? And more recently, a certain Hollywood megastar, as we mentioned, announced his candidacy for governor of California on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And a former governor of Vermont attempted to breathe new life into his campaign after a loss in Iowa and an infamous speech that followed.
My decision, obviously, this is a very difficult decision to make. You know, it was the most difficult decision that I've made in my entire life, except the one in 1978. When I decided to get a bikini wax. It was a different ballgame.
Clapped in ways I, Howard Dean, can turn things around. Number 10.
Switch to decaf.
Number 8.
Marry Rachel on the final episode of Friends.
Oh, wouldn't that be sweet? I'd like to see that. Number 6.
Show a little more skin.
Number 4.
Start working out and speaking with an Austrian accent.
Joining us now to talk about the comedic skills of politicians is Craig Manasian, a political consultant and producer for Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. Currently, he's the director for the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival, which starts on Wednesday. And he joins us now from Aspen, Colorado, which is about to be inundated with political comedians. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you for having me.
Remind us, we were talking about it with Carol Daugherty, but remind us of the impact that Schwarzenegger's announcement of his candidacy had on the Leno show.
Well, you know, I think politicians approach these shows, and their staff certainly approaches these shows, in the same way you would market a movie. So, in the same way, and Schwarzenegger certainly understands this, doing an appearance on Leno and the way they handled it, leaving the drama of the announcement up to making the announcement on the show and encouraging people to tune in, really built a buzz around his candidacy. And you're also reaching people in a much more relaxed setting when they're very open to liking you or your product, the product in this case being a candidate. So it was very, very effective. It was actually smart politics.
Ralph Nader seemed to have just tried it again, though, with Tim Russert, a more traditional outlet.
Well, in that case, I think Ralph is trying to appear serious and wants to be considered a serious candidate. I think that he would do himself a disservice by going on a late-night show, and you have to know yourself and your staff has to know you and how you're going to come across. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a great presence on TV, and as an actor, certainly created an image for himself that he played off on Leno.
Mm-hmm.
Nader doesn't have that same ability.
How does the use of a comedy show compare, for example, Dean's appearance on Letterman? He was trying to defuse a situation.
Right. That's an interesting case, Neil, because he felt like he had to do that. Back to the Schwarzenegger example, he felt that he wanted to do this. This was the best way to create buzz for his campaign. Dean only did Letterman because he got such a negative reaction from his speech in Iowa that he felt like he had to poke fun at himself to diffuse the fallout from that speech. And the smarter politicians are actually proactively looking to non-traditional news outlets like comedy to create an image for themselves before they get into trouble, before they have to do it.
Is there a rule of thumb as to when politicians should consider going on to the comedic grab bag?
I don't think there's a hard and fast rule of thumb. I think, number one, you have to know yourself and know you have to be very cognizant of your pros and cons and understand how you would appear on TV. Looking back at
should you have a really good idea of what it is you want to say?
Exactly. You should know what you want to say. You should know how this is going to help you or potentially hurt you. There's a real downside to it. I think that back in the 1996 campaign, Bob Dole didn't do a lot of late-night TV. And then, now looking back, people say, well, that may have helped him. He has a good sense of humor, and he seems to be pretty witty. And he might have been able to counteract the fact that some people may have perceived him as somewhat old compared to the younger Clinton. And that could have helped him. But I think the other side was his staff knew him very well, knew that he could be somewhat acerbic, and he might come off as relatively nasty on those shows. So there's no hard and fast rule. You just have to know yourself and know how the audience is going to react.
We're speaking with Craig Manasian. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the air. And this is Abigail, who's with us from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Abigail. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I would like to make a comment, kind of a follow-up on Stephen Colbert's comments. And overall, I think that comedy in the news is rather necessary in sort of a need for catharsis, especially nowadays with network news and with the Internet. There's just sort of this information overload. And so, in the need for drama in network news, it's sort of, I think, a necessary release. And I think that also, comedy can sometimes speak the truth more than, more than anything, any sort of dramatic overhaul, such as in, you see, like, in Greek comedies, like Euripides and Aristophanes used comedy to, you know, really, really point the truth out to their audience. And I think that's a...
Those guys and the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, as we just heard from Stephen Colbert, definitely also have a point of view. Do you listen to the catharsis that you agree with?
Right.
Okay.
I think that's a good point. I think here in Aspen at the Comedy Festival, we see that comedy is one of the sharpest forms of social commentary because it's one of the most immediate. You know, a stand-up comic is playing off his audience. There's no director involved. There are no camera angles. There's not a lot of other types of ways to package what the comedian is doing. So he's this this incredible platform to really, you know, talk about social issues. And I think to your point about the need for catharsis, just look at what happened after September 11th. Until Letterman and Leno and everyone got back up on the air, sort of everybody was holding their breath collectively to see if you could even do comedy. And once they got on there and did their thing, I think everyone sort of exhaled and said, you know, we can start getting back to normal, at least very slowly.
Abigail, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
And let's see if we get another call in. Tony is with us, and Tony's calling from Austin, Texas.
Hi. I was calling, too, to comment on, you know, one of the big values that I get out of things like Comedy Central or The Onion, which is an online parody of, it's more a parody of news, I mean, it's just as much a parody of news coverage.
Oh, at least, yeah.
And it really kind of, to me, like when you know what the angle is, you know, they're not, there was a story that Daily Show did about a 5-year-old kid who was tobogganing on his land, I mean, on a neighbor's land and got a ticket for trespassing, and they take the landowner's side of it and, you know, really make fun of the landowner by acting like his friend, but at the same time they use all the negative screen and, mm-hmm. and they change the music depending on which point of view, and it kind of really puts a fine point on that. You know the story's not true, and you pay more attention to the way the story's being delivered, and it really helps me notice how that's kind of done in mainstream, which you kind of get brain dead to.
It's interesting. We got an email along those lines from George Davis in Blacksburg, Virginia. Do you think that presenting the news with humor gets people to think about the issues in a way that the mainstream news no longer can? Does finding something funny lead to one questioning their own biases? Craig?
I think so. I think that, to go back to what you were saying about the Pew Center, sometimes it's not information that people are getting from the Daily Show or the late night shows, but what they're getting is how to think about that information, how they're getting opinion from it. The Howard Dean speech is a great example. Mm-hmm. Had that just been covered by the traditional news outlets, I don't think it may have been that big a deal. It's when you're watching Letterman and Leno and they're really making fun of Howard Dean for the speech that you start saying, well, wait a minute, maybe this is a little weird. You know, nobody wants to be the not popular kid, and you know, it's sort of like high school when everybody's picking on one person, and in this case through comedy you kind of don't want to support that person.
Thanks very much, and good luck with the festival this week.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Craig Manasian is director of the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival, joined us from Aspen, Colorado, where that festival kicks off on Wednesday. When we come back from a break, we'll talk about where the Deaniacs are throwing their enthusiasm and how they may factor into tomorrow's Democratic primaries. 800-989-8255, TOTN at npr.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.